Hi, everyone. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochter, and I represent the political center. We have a special episode today on the political left, Shireen Gourvani.
Hello, and I'm excited to be joined also on the left. Another Democrat is in the room. We have Representative Doug Owens, who is in our state legislature, and we are so thrilled to have you here.
I am delighted to be here.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah.
So tell us, just let's start with the moment we're in. Can you tell us where you represent? What district are, what does that look like?
I represent Olympus Cove and East Mill Creek in the beautiful Salt Lake Valley.
Yeah, fantastic.
Great area. That's where I'm from.
Yes.
Born and raised. I'm an Olympus High grad.
Wonderful part of town. We still have irrigation ditches, and it feels like the country once in a while.
Yes, we like that. As a person who grew up in North Dakota, I was telling a story today. When I opened my front door, I could hear cows. So it's not quite that country, but it is nice and very quaint. But you come from a family engaged in Utah politics. Can you tell us a little bit about your
background?
Well,
I go way, way back. More years than I care to remember exactly. But in general terms, I came of age when Utah was a Democratic-leaning swing state. If anybody can remember that that used to be the case, they're going to be my age or older. Back in the 70s, my dad ran for Congress and walked across the state 711 miles and defeated an incumbent on an anti-Vietnam War platform.
Wow, those are the days. That's a long time ago.
And when he won that election, that meant Utah had two of two Democrats in the House of Representatives. One of two senators was a Democrat, and a Democratic governor, Cal Rampton. So those were the glory days for us Democrats.
About how old were you when all that was happening?
I was 9 years old in 1972. And I say glory days for Democrats. The truth is that people in those days, although they believed in their party goals, also believed that other people had different perspectives that were valuable. And they reached across after elections ended to make good policy, enduring policy, because the truth is that's what you got to do to have political progress that's stable and makes sense as you get consensus to move forward. Yeah. And people just were more willing to do that. Nowadays, where the political airwaves are dominated by other kinds of concerns. And anyway, so I love that. Even though I talk about it being Democratic glory days, it was really just a more pragmatic time.
Yeah, Shireen, I have to double down on this, though, because for listeners, just think about this. We had three terms of Cal Rampton, and then we had two terms of Scott Matheson. So this is five consecutive terms in the Utah governor's office with a Democrat representing the state.
Yeah. And these were popular guys who were viewed as consensus builders, and they weren't even hard-fought elections, most of them. They were kind of consensus re-elections.
Yeah. It would be nice to get back to a more consensus sentiment, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So did you know, were you interested in politics early? Did you know that you wanted to pursue this route?
I liked it early on. I got worried about pollution. I read about rivers catching fire, and I talked to my dad about it, and he'd say, well, you know, you can make rules against that. And that was an aha moment for me that you could get into politics and work on things you cared about.
Yeah. This is the Cuyahoga River in Ohio, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I do. My sister lived in Ohio. I used to spend summers there, and I too was caught by the interest of a river catching on fire. It was that polluted.
Yeah. You got that in common.
Yeah, I think, I mean, for me, the modern equivalent is people being able to set water coming out of their faucets on fire, and that has to do with some of the fracking and some of the work that's happening.
Does that happen in North Dakota?
It has happened, yes. And I think the other part of it for me is kind of this notion. I think Utah has some similarities, but I think people feel like North Dakota is a place where there's just not a lot happening. So it's okay for these really disruptive industries to come in and really change the fabric and feel of the landscape that feels like it has a little consequence. Mm-hmm. And I think there are some similar arguments that have been made over time about the desert, about southern Utah. And I think having that connection to environmental causes is something we're going to talk even more about in the second half. But I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about redistricting, which I know is something that impacted your father and something that probably is familiar to you as well.
Yes.
So talk a little bit about what you're seeing in here, or what's brought up for you in the past.
Indeed. Thanks, Shireen. You know, we've just lived through this burst of activity. We had the Supreme Court tell the legislature they had to follow Proposition 4. And the legislature took a swing at that, and then the district court said, you came up short. You didn't follow the rules of Prop 4 is what the judge found in the district court case, and said that there were improper political concerns that had been taken into account in drawing those boundaries. So she rejected the legislative boundary. Anyway, you know this. I was one of the two Democrats with Luz Escamilla from the Senate, appointed to the redistricting committee.
How many Republicans were on it?
Five or six.
Five or six,
and it was
and then
proportional.
Two
I'm not whining about that.
Yeah, no,
from
I'm
that
just trying to get a perspective. Of who,
but
you're one of the primary people from the Democratic side.
Yeah,
working on
one of two, and the chairs were wonderful. Scott Sandel in the Senate, Candace Perucci in the House, really endeavored to keep politics out of it. I think that what happened was they were kind of let down by the expert that had been hired, a guy named Sean Trendy, who has done a lot of work for Republicans nationally. And the district court got into it and found that he had done some political stuff that the legislature was trying to be careful not to do. And so that's the way I diagnose what happened in the legislature, is kind of the expert that was retained by the majority let him down, frankly, because they had really tried, my Republican colleagues had tried very hard to follow Prop 4, and it was the expert that had ran into trouble. Now, I think the story you're interested in, Shireen, if I know from our warm-up discussion, was that my dad was in the House of Representatives in 1990, and it was really a sharp contrast, the story that played out back then 30 years ago, with when he was represented mostly Salt Lake County, and the Republican, we had a majority in both House and Senate in the legislature, and they could have redistricted him, and there was discussion that that would happen. And to this day, I have the Tribune comics of the line being drawn through my parents' bed. But they didn't do that. It was interesting because there had been discussion of doing that and it didn't happen. They left the district intact. And the reason was that Republicans realized that it was helpful to have somebody who represented Utah to the Democrats in Washington. And the truth is, no matter what, the reality is that half the power structure in this country over time is Democratic and half is Republican. Yeah. Now, that can change, but generally that's kind of true. And so why not have an ambassador for Utah we've had wonderful Democrats in Congress, not only my old man, Wayne Owens, but Jim Matheson, Ben McAdams, and others that really, you know, it's hard to look back and think, well, they were crazy. That was bad for Utah. It was good for Utah.
Yeah.
And so I hope we get back to that someday.
And Natalie, you've seen this up close.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I think, what I love is your historical context here, because you say your father, you know, was a candidate in 1990. So if we go back in time, Norm Mangiter is elected in roughly what?
84. Yeah, he beat my dad.
Okay, and then he's in for two terms. So now we've got a Republican in the state house, and we've had a Republican in the governor's office.
In the governor's office, yeah.
And now we've had it ever since. We have two terms of Norm Mangiter, three terms of Mike Leavitt, a partial term by Olean Walker, and then you get, you know, two from Huntsman and two and a half plus from Herbert. Now we've got two of Cox. But that shows you the political swing that occurred.
Yeah, that's right.
And the majority has gotten steeper in the legislature, too, in the House for the
Republicans.
What
I love, Representative Owens, that you do, and I've just watched this in your service, that you make it a point to be collaborative and continually productive with your Republican counterparts. And it really shows in what you do.
That's kind of you to say that.
Even what you just said about the you know, Representative Perucci and Senator Sandel, that, you know, you give them credit for keeping politics out of these things. You're very conciliatory in your tone and—
Well, and I was a private sector lawyer for 30 years and worked with a lot of Republicans, and they're rational beings. You know, we just think a little differently. So I never came into it with much of a partisan edge, frankly. It's nice. I'm glad you noticed that,
but,
Natalie.
But what do we do? Because most people don't conduct themselves that way. There's too much acrimony. There's too much division. There's too much contempt.
And I think nationally that's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. I think in Utah, the Democrats don't represent much of a threat to the Republicans, mm-hmm. and they're willing to listen if we can bring a sensible idea that in their world. So we look for that common ground, you know?
Yeah.
And I just really think if we focus on the common ground nationally instead of the divisive stuff that makes a lot of money for the people in the infotainment world and all the
social media,
the siloed websites and all this stuff that reinforce people's views and demonize. There's a lot of money being made demonizing and othering other people instead of trying to find the common ground. I've had discussions with leaders in the Republican Party, and we both agree that if we just focus on the common ground, we'd all get 75% or more of what we want.
Isn't that the truth?
You know? Yeah. I think it's even higher than that. Mm-hmm. If you spent all your time on the stuff you had in common, you wouldn't even have time to get to the stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm exaggerating, but not by much.
Yeah. So you initially jumped into politics running for Congress. Is
yeah,
that
I did.
Right? I did that too.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
tell me about what drove you to do that.
Well, you know, I saw Jim Matheson retiring from the what was then the 4th Congressional District, and he had narrowly defeated Mia Love, but I thought I could give that a swing since even though it was it leaned Republican by 16 points is the way the analysts put it, meaning a Republican had a 16-point advantage. But Jim had just pulled it off, and I thought, well, you know, maybe lightning will strike and it'll be worth it. So I gave it a shot, and so I have Mia Love's boot print on my backside twice in 2014, 2016.
Yeah.
She was a very good candidate and inspired a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Recently passed away way too young.
Yeah.
Very tragic. And she had some moderate good instincts too for, you know, my seat, the incumbent where I live in the legislature, Patrice Arendt, retired, and then I ran for that.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a little break, but when we come back, I would love to talk with you about some of the things that you've prioritized in your time in the legislature, and then really shift to talking more about the outdoor industry and the impact that that has on our economy.
Sounds great. Let's take a short break. Natalie Gochner with Shereen Gurbani and Representative Doug Owens. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shereen Gurbani on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the political center and right today because we have a special guest, Shereen.
We have a special guest. Representative Doug Owens is with us representing Mill Creek and you said another area.
Olympus Cove.
Olympus Cove. We're so happy to have you currently serving in the Utah legislature.
Two D's in the House.
Yeah.
Usually we have John Dougal. Me both on the right, and today we've got two people on the left.
Wow.
Yes. It's really nice to have
you. And look,
you
we're
here.
All getting along.
I know. So I was curious if you would talk a little bit about when you thought about running for the state legislature, what were some of the things, some of the issues that were driving you? I know the environment's important to
you.
Yeah,
the same reasons I ran for Congress. I think Utah is really the most beautiful place. I've lived back east, I've lived on the West Coast, and lived up in Canada growing up, and I really think it's spectacular here. And I felt like we could find some common ground on public land management issues, and I was really worried about the Great Salt Lake, as I know a lot of people are. And education is another big deal for me. My mom had been a teacher in a Title I school and worrying about those kinds of things.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That would drive all of us, you know, the things that really a lot of people
care. So environment and education. What's your highest priority for the environment in this state?
Well, I think it's putting water in the Great Salt Lake. You know, that's become an existential. It's become apparent that that's an existential issue. It's been accumulating for decades now, but I think it's become obvious to all of us over the last 5 or 6 years that it's an existential issue for the Wasatch Front.
Yeah. And when you say that, what I think that we think about this is like back to the kind of first segment. Sometimes I think people think about it kind of dead. It's a salty lake. Like, what is happening out there? But we know that there are a lot of economic drivers tied to the lake and the health of the lake.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that stand out for you when you think about?
And I was in that crowd, Shereen, that thought, you know, well, that was a very secondary issue for me.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure we maintained our red rock country and the mountains and stuff that were more front of mind for me, you know, because the lake, I've been there a few times, but it was not front of mind, you know.
Yeah.
But to really realize the catastrophic health issues, the biological issues for if you care about wildlife, and then the economic issues, you know, we could destroy all our property values if we have a dust bowl that we're living in. So and seeing the enormity of the problem is sobering because, you know, there's hundreds of saline lakes like ours around the world. A lot of them, most of them have gotten into trouble and none of them have been rescued. In nowhere other place is there such a large lake so close to a big population. So we got to fix it.
Yeah.
We got to set the example for the world.
Now, as an outsider, and I know you are deeply engaged in this, Natalie, so please jump in. But as an outsider, it felt like we had some really good momentum, and then it sort of felt quiet. How would you describe our attention and willingness to do what we need to do to make sure that this lake does not turn into a dust bowl? Do you want to start with your perspective, Natalie?
Well, I mean, I've never seen the legislature turn on a dime like this. And so to the degree that people think we've lost some momentum, I disagree. We have a commissioner of Great Salt Lake that's doing great work. The legislature's passed a lot of bills that change state water law, that have appropriated money for secondary water metering, money for, you know, purchasing agricultural water leases. We're just getting started. And I actually have a lot of optimism about the lake. Why do I? I guess I just believe in Utah. But we've got we've run 1,000 scenarios on that lake, and we can do this. There's scenarios that work.
I love that approach and agree with it wholeheartedly, and tip my hat to Natalie. I love her economic voice in our state, always a voice of reason. And that's a way to find common ground, is looking at economics, I think, when we can't find it on other bases. And Natalie penned this beautiful letter that was penned by this all the participants in the Governor's Roundtable a couple months ago that had a really lovely expression of our intention as state leadership on behalf of many, many constituencies in the state to make sure we keep that lake alive. And thank you, Natalie, for doing that.
Oh, yeah, you're kind.
But I totally agree that I would say we have not taken the foot off the pedal. But I know that's the public perception.
Yeah.
But
I would love to be wrong, please. Yeah.
Well, there's more to do. I mean, there's no question. But if you look at the last 5 years, the legislature has really remodeled the whole infrastructure relating to the lake. And I tip my hat to Republican leaders, the Speaker of the House, Brad Wilson before the current Speaker, the existing Speaker, Mike Schultz, Casey Snyder, have been huge leaders on the lake and really done some major things. You could not dedicate, if a farmer wanted to send water to the lake and dedicate it to help the lake, you could not do that. You would lose your water.
Yeah.
They changed fundamentals of Utah water law, huge financial investments in secondary water metering and ag conservation, like really good intentions by many Republican leadership, many members of Republican leadership. So what we have got to now, though, is a point in time where it's necessary to acquire water for the lake, either through long-term leasing or purchasing.
Yeah.
And that's going to be tough because now we got to and there's a ton of other changes I could tell you about. I was the guy who got us on helicopters, got the Army to fly the entire legislature from Capitol Hill when the water was right at the low point 4 years ago to see so everybody in the legislature could see those low levels, which was extremely sad and sobering.
Yeah.
We're not that bad off, but we're not too far. We're one bad summer from being back to that point. And really where I think the leadership has taken us, there's a lot of really good things in play, and maybe I could just tick them off. Mm-hmm. Besides the leadership intention, we've got a church citizen here with a lot of water and some financial resources and a strong interest in making sure we don't lose the community along the Wasatch Front.
Yeah.
And the LDS Church has now made a second gift, and the new presiding bishop, when he was a counselor, told me they were going to make many gifts of water. Delighted at that prospect. And then the economics are going to, I think, of all the places in the world where saline lakes have gotten into trouble, this is the one where it's most clearly necessitated by the economics. We cannot blow up our property values, our health issues, and
our tourism,
livability, tourism.
Yeah.
We got the Olympics coming in, is it 9, 10 years? I forget if it's nine or
2034.
Yeah. So there's a move to get 8 feet in the water of water in that lake in 8 years and present the world a much, much better off lake that's right on the cusp of full-blown health and restoration. And I think we're going to do it. And so there's those big pieces in play that are – it's not going to depend on the leadership necessarily of one politician here and there. It's going to be these big structural, political, economic forces that push it toward success.
Yeah. Well, I like that.
I love it. Congressman, you've been a real champion.
I wish.
You've been a real champion. Yeah. You've been a real champion of outdoor recreation, the tourism industry, all the amenities that come from these incredible special places in our state. I'm going to just give a few numbers, right? We had 6.5 million skier days last year, 2.5 billion in skier and snowboarder spending, about 31,000 jobs. If I look at tourism overall, it's a $13 plus billion industry with 167,000 jobs. bringing in, what, $2.5 billion in state and local tax revenue.
Yeah.
So the economics of outdoor recreation are a big deal in this state.
They are, and they're getting bigger. And you know, those are impressive numbers, and they really don't even tell the whole picture. Because if you drive down through Draper on I-15 and you see a company out there, Lucid Software, that was started by Carl Sun, who was Utah CEO of the Year about 6 or 8 years ago. He put that company here because he wanted to ski before work. But it's not directly involved in outdoor rec, but the people are. And so that's the untold story beyond these big numbers that Natalie was just sharing with us, is we need to be aware that this is why now, according to the Kim Gardner Institute, 1 in 7 jobs in Utah is a tech job or closely allied. And we need to take awareness of the fact that that part of the economy is also attributable to outdoor rec, because we did another study, my nonprofit, Utah Outdoor Partners, and the Kim Gardner Institute did another study that said that's the number one reason tech people want to live in Utah is proximity to recreation potential, even though they're not directly engaged in outdoor rec. It's a lifestyle issue.
Yeah. So a way to think of this, Shireen, is that we're in competition for talent. The tech sector's, you know, trying to get talent. And when you're trying to get talent, people with talent can live anywhere they want.
Yep.
And then they'll choose places with life quality.
Right.
And many of them choose this valley, this state.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's obviously I can see that it's a huge driver. I do think there are pieces of the picture that are missing, right? When I kind of think about the attitudes around our public lands, it would be nice to feel like that was more thinking about that. There was just a greater focus on all of the ways that it improves our quality of life.
You say that, but think of what Senator, when Senator Lee did his proposal, it didn't go very well.
No, it didn't.
I mean, I think this state really—
To sell public lands,
just to be clear. I think this state does really appreciate public lands. They just have some issues with parts of our state where, you know, we have some counties where it's 90% plus owned by the federal government. That's a little hard.
Sure.
And we have these old dichotomies we've inherited from prior generations, which is tree hugger versus business use, or Democrat versus Republican. Yeah. Washington, D.C. management versus state control.
Yeah.
So they've gotten us bogged down in these old ways of thinking. And so I think the old fashioned paradigm is to say, hey, we should get those lands away from the federal government. I think if we look at the economics, it will give us automatic solutions. So people like me look at a beautiful mountain and say, oh, let's save that. You know, that's enough. It's pretty. It's got some animals living on it. That's But if you talk to people who don't necessarily see it that way, you can show them, and there's more and more data that's pointing this way, you can say, let's put a trail on that mountain and leave it alone, because it's going to make more money for the state
in the long run.
If we view ourselves that way. I would like to see us change our viewpoint of who we are as a state as being really dependent on this outdoor rec potential and see those federal lands as a gravy train.
Do you have a favorite place in this state that you'd highlight
for our listeners? Panguitch, where my family came from.
Oh, wow.
A lot of hunting and fishing trips growing up, and we were never serious about it. My dad said, this is just armed camping. But we like to head that way, and it's really beautiful.
Yeah. Natalie, what's your favorite place in Utah?
Oh, I could go all over the place. I met my husband at Delicate Arch. Oh. I mean, that's the first time I saw the guy.
Wow.
Yeah, go figure, right?
How did I know that story?
I'm on my senior, trip in college, and there he is right there.
Oh, wow.
But I guess I love the Brighton Bowl.
Yeah.
To hike those mountains, Tuscarora and Millicent and Wolverine and you name them. Anyway, and then I love the Red Rock. And Red Rock, I go as far as Bluff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's a favorite place for me. How about you, Shireen?
Well, I love the Burr Trail Road. I love to be down in Boulder, Utah, and be down there. But I also think I have sort of a belief that I know not everyone drinks. I do. Like, your favorite bar is the one that you go to. And so for me, I think my favorite public lands, my favorite open space is the one that's closest to my home. And I'm there genuinely numerous times a week. And I often walk the same trail and on the same roads. And I just love seeing, just to be able to walk out my door. I'm lucky to live close to downtown and be in the foothills in minutes is truly
pretty cool.
A gift.
Pretty cool. We have about
same
a minute.
I live by Mill Creek.
We have about a minute left in the program. Representative, the Utah Trail Network must be something that you're a big fan of. Yeah. It's pretty amazing what our state's done here.
We are doing wonderful, and we need to do more active transportation, more parks, more pit toilets. I'm the guy who can find where we need pit toilets because there's not one where I need one.
Yes, there need to be more. Well, I'm so glad that you joined us for this time. Thank you. If there's anything that you would give advice or things that you would reflect back to our listeners about engaging with their elected leaders, any last words or things that you would suggest?
Look for that common ground with someone who's not seeing it your way. The way your family runs, the way your business runs, the way anything runs is by, we should be grateful when people don't see things the same. And we can put our heads together and come up with a better solution that is enduring, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how we, when we work across those party lines or differences of opinion, that's how we get enduring progress.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Appreciate your service, Representative.
Thank you.
I'm Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gorbani and Representative Doug Owens. Thanks, everybody, for listening.